This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Cody and Gold on 96.5 The Fan. Alex and Cody both gone today, along with producer Drew. Logan Weber in here filling in alongside Nathan Williams. We've been talking Kansas City Royals. We talked a little bit about the extension request from the Kansas City Chiefs to the state of Kansas in regards to the star bond issue. We may revisit those a little bit later on in the program here this morning. 913-586-7965. That is our text line number. And phase two of the All-Star voting begins in Major League Baseball. Two guys who have already punched their ticket to the July 15th All-Star game, Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge. They were the top vote getters in each league, surprising absolutely nobody. So they will be automatic starters for the game. The finalists have been announced in each league. For the catcher position, Alejandro Kirk and Cal Raleigh. First base is Paul Goldschmidt and Vladimir Guerrero. Second base, Jackson Holliday and Gleyber Torres. Third base is Bregman and Jose Ramirez. Bobby Witt Jr. is a finalist at the shortstop position alongside Jacob Wilson. Designated hitters were Ryan O'Hearn and Ben Rice, and then the outfield is Javi Baez, Riley Green, Stephen Kwan, and Mike Trout. And then the NL side is pretty much just chock full of Los Angeles Dodgers. Will Smith and Carson Kelly at catcher, Pete Alonso, Freddie Freeman at first, Tommy Edman and Ketel Marte at second base, Manny Machado and Max Muncy at third, Mookie Betts and Francisco Lindor at shortstop. And then in the outfield, it's Ronald Acuna Jr., Pete Crow Armstrong, Teoscar Hernandez, Andy Pajes, Juan Soto, and Kyle Tucker. The Dodgers quite literally have a finalist at every position for the All-Star game in the National League as phase two of the voting is set to begin. And I kind of went on a tangent about this on Friday when I was hosting After Hours. Or I should say Monday when I was hosting After Hours. And I kind of want to do the same thing here. And some people are going to agree with me, some aren't. It is what it is. I think Major League Baseball, along with the NBA, and maybe even the NFL, we have got to change the way that we vote on our All-Stars. I'm sorry, but like something has got to give because again, this is the risk you take with something like a fan vote, which I understand the appeal of. You're trying to get the fans involved. You're trying to make them feel like they are a part of the game. And with that, you're more likely to get people that tune in and watch, right? When they feel like they have a voice. They have something. They can watch the game and then vote, and it matters. And those sort of, I get it. But Jonathan Aranda of the Tampa Bay Rays is third in Major League Baseball this year in batting average. He's hitting almost 330. 8 home runs, 41 RBIs. He's got an OBP of 412, which is the best in baseball behind only Aaron Judge. And yet, he's not a finalist to be a starting to be a first baseman in the American League. I don't understand how that happens. Vladimir Guerrero is hitting 281 with 11 home runs. Good year, but it's not like he's hitting 330. Paul Goldschmidt is hitting 288 with 8 home runs, 32 RBIs. Aranda has a better batting average. He has more RBIs than either of the other two guys, and he's got the same number of home runs as Paul Goldschmidt, and an OBP up over 400 and an OPS of nearly 900. But because Paul Goldschmidt and Vladimir Guerrero have better name recognition, bigger name recognition, they're the ones that are being thrown in as finalists for the All-Star game. I mean, come on. What are we doing here? It's a popularity contest. You're not rewarding the best players at their position in this league at this point in the year because fans are allowed to just dominate in certain, right? I mean, Paul Goldschmidt is having a great year, a resurgent year for the New York Yankees. But if he wasn't playing for the New York Yankees, if he was still in Arizona or even St. Louis, he wouldn't have been in the top five in first base voting in the All-Star game. But New York is a massive market with a huge fan base, and it throws the entire thing out of whack.
This is going to show how much I know about the MLB All-Star game. Do they still allow players to, like, just subtly opt out, like if they say that something's not really feeling right? Because I know a few years ago it was a big deal. Like, they'd get elected, they wouldn't go.
I think so. As far as I know, they still do that. I know, I mean, like, the NBA does that. Obviously, the Pro Bowl still does that because you have ninth alternates at certain positions.
Sure, sure. But I guess, like, I know managers make additions and select, you know, substitutions. Or if a guy's really hurt, they substitute them, or, you know, you have to supplement and get one player from every team still, which is the craziest. But, and by the way, if we're doing that, can we bring back freaking individual team uniforms in the All-Star game?
Oh, that's, those are sick.
Talk about you going on a rant. That's that is the dumbest thing about the MLB All-Star game. Why they went away from that, I have no idea.
Fair.
It's a fan vote. It's fallible. I'll say this on the NL side, when you mentioned the Dodgers having a finalist at every position, They've gotten pretty much all of the positions right. Maybe Tommy Edman doesn't deserve to be a finalist, but the rest of them do. And, you know, maybe Teoscar Hernandez is on the periphery, but, like, he won't be a starter. It'll be Pete Crow, Armstrong, Acuna, Soto. Those guys will start.
Right.
So, like, on the NL side, this massive push for the Dodgers, it's correct. I know we did that here locally in 2015, and right, Omar Infante shouldn't have made it, but it's a little, like, folk legend that he did. Yeah, it's definitely a name recognition contest. I mean, could that have worked in Bobby Witt Jr.'s favor on the AL side as well? Like, Jeremy Pena might have a case to be in there. I think Jacob Wilson's your starter. I'm not going to get upset if Bobby Witt finishes second. And obviously, as a Royals fan, I want to see Bobby there. I think Jacob Wilson's been the best shortstop in the league so far, especially, you know, offensively. Bobby makes up for a lot of that defensively. Yeah, Michael Garcia not being there at third base is kind of frustrating. You're right. Jonathan Aranda at first base has got to be the biggest one off of this list.
I would agree. And he's not the only one, right? I mean, Bregman was having a good year with the Boston Red Sox, but the guy hasn't played in a month and a half. And so, but somehow he's still a finalist at third base when you've got a guy in Michael Garcia hitting nearly 320 who's not on that list. He wasn't even in the top five of third base voting in the American League. And somebody in the text line says it, you know, did you have this take 10 years ago with Omar Infante in 2015? Yes, I did.
Yeah,
I did,
because it was our team.
It was hilarious, but it's ridiculous. It's just, I think that it comes down to, and especially with baseball, right? In the NBA, you have the all NBA teams. In football, you have the all pro teams, right? So there's something on the outside, whether that's media or player voting, that allows for these guys to hang their hat on. When you look at a guy's career and he's over with and you're like, oh, he only made three Pro Bowl games. Oh, but he was a 6-time all pro. That guy's a great player. The Hall of Fame recognition becomes a lot more reasonable. Baseball doesn't necessarily have that. They've tried, right? I think they're trying with the all MLB teams here in the last couple of years, but I don't know. I mean, second base in the National League is another example. Like Brendan Donovan, who's kind of flipped back and forth between playing second and DHing a little bit, but he's a primary second baseman hitting .301 this year. And yet Tommy Edman, who is not even statistically eligible as a second baseman for things like batting average or whatever because of how little he's played with injuries this year, he's somehow a finalist for second base in the National League. Why? Because he plays for the Dodgers.
Yeah, I think Edman is the one that Dodgers fans got wrong. But clearly there's been a push, and obviously their just engagement and attendance is better. And by the way, I need to verify this. The 816 says uniforms are going back to individual teams this year. If that's the case, I'm in. But I need to look this up and verify because I will. I mean, I guess we don't really set the DVRs anymore, but I'll make it appointment television to watch those introductions if those uniforms are back. That's thank you, 816, if you just broke that news to me. The other thing, in my opinion, that's, and I understand the need for engagement and you want to reach new audiences, we got to have those paper ballots at the ballparks back. Something about getting the keys out of your wall, out of your pocket, or getting a pencil from your scorecard and punching those little tabs and turning them in. Man.
I don't know. It's just, I get it, right? I understand the appeal of trying to elicit fan engagement, but I think there's a way to continue that trend while making it mean a little bit less, right? Create some sort of solution, some sort of, I don't know, where you take into account, okay, the fan vote will account for 40% of the equation. And then player opinion is accounting for another 40% of the equation. And then you have Major League Baseball itself, the executives, the ownership, and those that are attached to the league as a whole in terms of executives, they account for the final 20%. So I think that we're not doing enough to ensure that the best players at their given position, the most deserving players of an honor of being an all-star, are put into the all-star game.
I'm with you. And I guess I think it is easier than that in my mind, though, the solution. Because so Salvador Perez has been elected to 9 all-star games in his career. Do you know how many he's started? And I don't need the answer, but the fact that you didn't spit a number back at me tells me that I might be onto something here, which is let the fans elect one player at each position in each league to the game, and the manager decides the starting lineup. Like the fans should not be able to duly elect Omar Infante to starting in the All-Star game at second base, right? So let's, if the fans want to vote in Paul Goldschmidt, okay, great. He's got a designation as an all-star, he'll be at the game, but the manager can still elect Jonathan Aranda and put him in the lineup and, you know, give him the all-star recognition as well. So I think if you want to do away with fan recognition, I just like the whole like 30% fan vote, 30%, whatever. I think we're getting too into the weeds about all of this. Like, just let us elect. You also can't go to the flip side and say the fans don't, because I understand how big of a marketing tool this is to draw fans to the game in general, to the sport, but also to the All-Star game itself. But yeah, just like, okay, great. You voted for Tommy Edman. He's an All-Star reserve, at least. And the manager can decide what to do with him from there. And at the end of his career, you won't say, yeah, but he didn't start that All-Star game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a fair point. And yeah, probably a little bit too analytical in the approach of trying to come up with some strange solution or equation to make it work. There's a couple of suggestions in the text line that I don't mind at all. I got one that says, you know, too many options, the amount of players that you're eligible to vote on, right? You go on the MLB website and you go by position, and there's 20 different guys to vote for. And only maybe four or five of those guys are deserving of even picking up an All-Star game vote.
Well, yeah, and let's be honest about what that leads to, because it's not just like someone in a bigger city voting for their player. It's a casual baseball fan getting online. It's a kid getting online to vote for the All-Star game or whatever. And their knowledge of baseball is, okay, I live in Kansas City. I know that Kyle Isbell is our center fielder. Well, he's not doing so hot. What other center fielder do I know? Or maybe he's not playing center as much this year, but like, I know Aaron Judge. Like, yeah. I'm just going to check for Aaron Judge.
Mike Trout or whoever, whatever. Right? Doesn't matter what kind of year they're having, right? Name recognition becomes a major factor in this sort of voting. So minimizing the amount of players that are eligible to be voted on. So maybe the players or managers or Major League Baseball gets together before phase one of the voting begins and says, okay, we're going to put five players or four players at each position that are eligible to be voted upon based off of their accomplishments and accolades this season. And then if you want to have a legacy guy, I know Mike Trout's not having a great year, but maybe you want to throw a guy like Mike Trout out there, right? Or like Albert Pujols' last year with the St. Louis Cardinals, although he had a great year and was deserving of making an All-Star game somehow at 40 plus years old. If you want to have those legacy guys still be eligible for voting, that's great. Then you have another suggestion of limiting the number of votes, because the amount of fan voting is insane. You can vote five times per day. I mean, the amount of votes on a day-by-day-by-day basis, you can inflate those numbers greatly in certain markets, right? You could have 5,000 or 10,000 diehard Yankees fans daily, and there are way more than that who just go on there and vote for all Yankees players or what have you. I get the thought of, oh well, you know, there's memes and funny stuff to it. Aranda wouldn't be on the ballot if you want to limit the number of players. How would Jonathan Aranda not be on the ballot? He's got the best batting average of any first baseman in baseball. He's got the best OPS of any first baseman in baseball. He's got the best on-base percentage of any first baseman in baseball. He's got the best WAR of any first baseman in baseball. Aranda would be on the list.
Yeah. Oh, of course he would. And I had to look up Albert Pujols' line, because we were talking about this in the pre-show as well, is that random great year he had when he went back to St. Louis at the end. He hit 270 with an OPS of 895 in 2022. 270 is the highest batting average he had had in 11 seasons. Like, he just went back to St. Louis, and yeah, he was definitely deserving of that vote. It wasn't a legacy vote, but a guy like Trout this year would be. And I guess the other issue that I run up against in my brain is like, does it really matter at the end of the day? Like, the guys are going to find their way there. But also, we still give so much reverence to All-Star game selections when it comes to things like Hall of Fame voting or those sorts of discussions, when it comes to legacy discussions after a player's career. So when it comes to a guy like Tommy Edman, I'm not super upset that he might have an All-Star game he didn't deserve. Take a guy like Salvador Perez, though. We are going to lean heavily on the fact that by the end of his career, he's going to be in 9 or 10 All-Star games, right? That he's won the Gold Gloves and the Silver Sluggers and things that might be a little bit arbitrary. So I think this stuff, you know, I think we do still owe it to the game in a way to like start getting this stuff more accurately represented.
Yeah, I mean, do I think that the number of All-Star games you made should matter in terms of your Hall of Fame availability? Probably not, but it does. And so when you're seeing the All-Star voting become such a name recognition popularity contest, I think that that's problematic, because it could ultimately impact a guy's ability to get into the Hall of Fame, right? It could affect the bottom line of that equation or whatever that the voters look at in Cooperstown as, is this guy good enough to make the major league, to make the Baseball Hall of Fame or not? And I think that that's problematic, especially in a sport like baseball, which, like I said earlier, I know that they do like the all MLB stuff now, but for a very long time they didn't. And it's not nearly at the level of what you see with the all NBA teams or the all pro teams in the NFL, where I think in baseball, more so than in any other professional sport, you look at the All-Star voting as to who are the best players in baseball. And that's the way that it has been for a very, very long time. That's the way that I believe it will continue to be. And by having the voting kind of structured the way it is, I feel like it's compromising that in a certain sense.
Yeah, and I think a favorite activity of mine is just like logging on to Baseball Reference and looking at somebody's stat sheet. When you look at Barry Bonds or Cal Ripken or Brooks Robinson, and you see just the wall of continuous All-Star games over to the right there, or Gold Gloves, or so whatever the award is, whatever those out of those awards that we give so much significance to, I don't have the context now. Maybe if I really want to do a deep dive, but at surface level, I don't have the context to say, well, in 1997, Barry Bonds actually, you know, he was really hot in the second half, but in the first half, Arizona Diamondbacks outfielder, deserved the, you know, that award more. I don't have all of that 30 years later. So I think there's good reason to reinvent this process. And I understand that fans need to still be involved to some extent from a PR standpoint. I'm not trying to get in the way of that at all. I think just let them appoint a player to the All-Star game at the position and give more credence to the manager. And then, I mean, it's probably more rewarding for them then, because I believe it's still the prior year's World Series managers that get to
manage. I believe so, yes.
That's going to be more fun than them, as you get more selection in who joins the team. You have your finger on the pulse better. And anyway, more of a reward for the managers and coaches and things like that that make it.
So with the finalists being announced this week, phase two of the voting starts on Monday at noon Eastern. And it will roll over until noon Eastern on July 2nd. Individuals voting once per 24 hours. The remaining starters will be announced on July 2nd. Pitchers and reserves will be revealed on July 6th. So I still believe that like managers, pitchers, reserves and things like those have a great, the managers have a great deal of influence as well as the commissioner on, and the league itself on the pitchers and the reserves. Maybe you flip that, right? I think you said something very similar to that earlier of putting the players and the managers and the MLB in charge of picking the starters for an event like this, and then let the fans vote on the reserves for an event such as the All-Star game. I kind of like that idea, to be honest.
Yeah, or just like not even that the fan winner is then the reserve, but just like the fans can elect a guy to go into the game, and we put less of a weight on who's going to start it, who's going to be the reserve. You know, is this pitcher going to pitch two innings at the start or just one? And is the pitcher on my team going to get the third inning? Or the fourth, and does that mean he's the second best? But no, I think Bubich has been better than Max Fried. So why'd Fried pitch before? Just like they're all stars. In the future, we're going to look back on this year and think, oh, they made the all-star team. Great. So I think we're just making just like minutiae out of things that like don't ultimately in context matter, if that makes any sense.
Probably not. If the managers from last year's World Series are managing, it could essentially be the American League All-Stars versus the Los Angeles Dodgers. Fair.
And what a year for the individual uniforms to come back when they're all going to be Dodgers uniforms in the first inning, apparently.
just hey, welcome the Los Angeles Dodgers and then 15 other guys that play for a different team. Hey, at least probably the starting pitcher for the National League won't be a Dodger. Then again, it probably could with Yoshinobu Yamamoto. It's just going to be the entire defense is going to be the Dodgers.
Skeens, man.
And then Skeens pitching.
Skeens, yeah.
Just Skeens on the ball. One Pirates uniform out there along with eight Dodgers uniforms.
You talked about Seth Lugo auditioning for the Dodgers. Talk about an audition. MLB Twitter will be going crazy when it's nine Dodgers fielders in the field and Paul Skeens on the bump. With the trade deadline coming up. Oh, yeah. Twitter will be on fire that night.
I'm sure it will. And if I'm Paul Skeens, I'm going to make the most of that because that man needs out of Pittsburgh. That man needs out of there so bad. He's been ridiculous this year and has a losing record. It's deplorable levels of behavior
That's another one. I know Shohei's pitching here this weekend. The cast of all-stars is going to be hitting for the Dodgers. Man, if Skeens is starting here in town in a couple of weeks, like it looks like he may, oh, man, I'm going to be clamoring for a ticket that evening. You got to go out, even if the team's not playing well, you got to go out and see that guy pitch in person.
Yeah, 4-7 with a 2.12 ERA. 2.12 ERA, and he is not just doesn't just have a losing record. He has three more wins or three more losses than wins.
Sounds like 09 Zach Greinke.
Oh, yeah, it does, actually. And that's why wins and losses are not a pitching stat, just like wins and losses aren't a quarterback stat. I mean, he's lost games this year where he pitched eight innings and gave up one earned run. Pitched eight innings, gave up one earned run. Pitched six innings, gave up two earned runs. Pitched seven innings, gave up two earned runs. Those are losses for Paul Skeens this year. Get that man out of Pittsburgh. He needs help. 913-586-7965 is our number. Somebody in the text line says, and I thought our team disappointed our pitchers. They kind of have been so far, but... Cody and Gold here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber in here today for Cody and Alex. Nathan Williams is in for Drew right here on your home for Kansas City sports. Cody and Gold here on 96.5 The Fan. Alex, Cody, Drew off today. Logan Weber in here with you alongside producer Nathan Williams. And earlier in the show this morning, we had a chance to visit with Jake Eisenberg. He is the play-by-play radio voice of the Kansas City Royals, talking about the recent skid with this team having lost five straight and coming up against the Dodgers starting tonight, where this team sits right now, where they sit in the future, and so much more. So we are going to replay that interview for you guys right now. Here is the voice of the Royals, Jake Eisenberg.
It's good to be with you. And I think we've got to change the name these Fridays. If Cody and Gold keep ducking out, we've got to change the name, I think.
I know. I guess today they're doing their football preparation session, or I don't even know what exactly they're calling it. Nathan and I are both just convinced that they're at a bar somewhere drunk at 10 a.m. just talking about football today. So I don't know. I think they're just having a good time under the guise of saying they're working.
Well, forget them. You and I are here. Let's chop it up.
All right, let's do that. And, you know, a bit of a tough stretch for the Royals here. They've lost five in a row, including this sweep against the Tampa Bay Rays over the past 3 days. You know, where are we at with this Royals team right now? Of course, the fan base, very vocal right now with this team sitting at 38-43. Last night, there was a lot of conversation in the locker room. Vinny with some pointed phrases. You heard from Matt Quatrero yesterday about where this team is and that they're not willing to just lay down. They're going to keep fighting. Where does the fight need to go for this Royals team in order to get back into playing competitive baseball?
Yeah, it's been kind of a weird year, right? Because they started a little bit slow, but then they got super hot and won 16 of 18, but then they slid back a little bit and, you know, had some trouble winning series, but weren't exactly losing series or getting swept. And then they had to win this homestand, and then they won four straight. Now they've lost five in a row. It's been a lot of peaks and unfortunately slightly more valleys than peaks. But while last year was kind of a steady climb over the course of the year, this year has been a lot more up and down and up and down. And I think you can, you know, obviously point to the offense with that, which has been up and down and up and down and mostly down, and certainly is down right now. And, you know, I think you can look at this in a number of ways, Logan. One of the things that I was kind of just taking a look at yesterday was, you know, it was game 81 of the season. You know, it's the mathematical midpoint of the year. And so that's a point of the year where, at least what I've come to understand over the last couple of years, you can kind of look around and say, okay, this is what this team has done for half the season. This is the team that you have. There are improvements that can be made with any team, but this is kind of what you got. And you're looking at a Royals team that has exceptional starting pitching and a really good bullpen and an offense that has been among the worst in baseball. All of those things can change because there's still another half of the season to play. And I don't think we've looked at any baseball season any time ever and said that a team that was one thing in the first half of the season was also the exact same thing in the second half of the season. Things can be similar, sure. In the Royals' case, for the offense, you hope that they're different and that they continue to improve. You also hope the pitching is similar. So I think you can look at this and say, the Royals are 5 games below 500 and, you know, knocking on the door of a wild card spot with the expanded, you know, wild card spots in baseball now over the last few years, you know, 3 wild card spots. The Royals are 3.5 games out of a wild card spot, 81 games through the year. I think you'd say, yeah, you know what? They've got a real good shot to be in the postseason. They've got some work to do, but you look at a whole half of the season left and you say, okay, there is plenty of time for the offense to pick up where it left off last year and try to turn it around.
You looked at this Royals team through the first few months of the year, and it was a team that at one point was, I don't know if it was the early part of May or even the midpoint of May, they were top 10 in Major League Baseball in terms of team batting average, hitting up over 250. And you thought, okay, it's a team that they hit for average, they get on base, but for some reason, when they get runners on second and third, they have a tendency to struggle. They can't really drive in many runs. And then, you know, you see this 5-game stretch here, this 5-game losing streak, where they're even struggling to just get guys on the base paths here. And I'm curious, from your perspective, what are you seeing on a day-to-day basis with this team and why they're having such trouble just putting the bat on the baseball and getting guys on base to try to score runs?
I mean, it's a cop-out, but I don't know. I mean, Q said it a couple times, too. If there was a magic button or one answer, then they would have pressed that button and they would have figured out that answer. And I think, you know, ultimately, offense in baseball is an incredibly nuanced and reactive and fluctuant thing. I think, interestingly, it's harder to sustain good offense, and it's less probable for bad offense to sustain over the course of the season than it is for pitching, because offense is such a reactionary thing. Hitting is such a reactionary thing, while pitching, you control the pace of the game. You control where the ball goes, and, you know, you can change pitching, I think, a little bit easier than you can change offense, generally speaking, from like a 30,000-foot view. One of the things that I think has been interesting is looking at, you know, the overall team average, and then looking at the average with runners in scoring position, and looking at some other numbers through 81 games this year and 81 games last year, and what other teams have done. And, you know, the Rays were just in town, and Q made this point, and he and Ryan were talking about that during the manager show. I thought it was really interesting. Last year, the Rays were one of the worst teams in baseball hitting with runners in scoring position. This year, they've been one of the best. There's no rhyme or reason why. That's just been the case this year. And unfortunately, it's been the opposite for the Royals, where last year they were one of the best. And this season, they've been one of the worst. But I'll give you just a couple of numbers that I've been looking at getting ready for tonight's game. The Royals' team average through 81 games last year was 242. The Royals' team average through 81 games this year is 243. It's pretty much identical in terms of just straight batting average from last year to this year. Now, hitting with runners in scoring position, last year at the midpoint, 287. This year at the midpoint, 220. That's clearly where the biggest difference is. One of the other differences has been, you know, in getting on base and slugging a little bit. So on base plus slugging, OPS, through 81 games last year, 702. That was about league average at this point last year. This year through 81 games, it's 661. That's bottom three in baseball. So there's a significant gap in the slug from last year. There's a significant gap in hitting with runners in scoring position from last year. But the overall batting average is pretty much the same. And I just think that's one of those things that raises an eyebrow and you start to understand, wow, runners in scoring position probably has a little bit more variance. A, has a little bit more variance than we realize. And B, maybe we didn't appreciate enough just how good the Royals were with runners in scoring position last year. That last year, as good as they were, was also not the norm. You know, we've gone from one extreme to the other, as opposed to one sustainable average thing to another, if that makes sense.
Talking about this team, and you look at the numbers right here at the halfway point of the year, and there's a set here that kind of is staggering to look at. When you see that the Royals have played 40 games on the road this year, and they've hit 43 home runs versus 13 home runs in 41 games at Kauffman. I know Kauffman's one of the toughest hitter ballparks in all of baseball, but why do you think that this team, or what have you seen that has allowed this team to struggle so much hitting the long ball at home this year compared to what they've done on the road?
Yeah, again, I don't know. I wish I had an answer, because look, other teams play at Kauffman Stadium too, and I think opponents have hit, I want to say 39 home runs. Visitors have hit 39 home runs at Kauffman Stadium. So those are the same conditions that the Royals have been playing in. If I had to take a stab at it, you know, and I'm really grasping at straws here, I'm guessing that maybe at home there's a little bit more of a line drive, gap to gap, put the ball in play approach, understanding that Kauffman Stadium plays big and it's harder to hit home runs. And if you have that same, you know, home run style approach, if you will, that you do at a visiting ballpark at Kauffman Stadium, it's more likely than not that that's going to be, you know, a warning track fly out or, you know, deep center sort of thing. So maybe there's something to it there where the Royals, more than other teams, are making a somewhat larger adjustment to their approach when hitting at home versus on the road because they're more acutely aware of the ballpark than other teams that are coming in who are kind of just coming in. We're here for 3 days. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. You know, we're not going to change everything because we're playing a different boat. Does that make sense? That's grasping at straws. And I don't know that that's something that is clearly visible or noticeable. But then when you look at the numbers and you see the home run differences, that's one thing that maybe could be different.
And I think that this Royals team has taken a different approach this year in terms of trying to find solutions than maybe we saw from them last year. A lot of what we saw last year with the trades for relief pitching and things like that, this year it's been a lot of within the organization itself. You've seen Noah Cameron make his way up to the big leagues. You've seen the Royals DFA certain relief pitchers and guys like Hunter Renfroe. Melendez got sent down and a lot of call-ups for some of their big-name prospects, some of which have been huge hits like Noah Cameron, others that have been a little bit more of a miss. Could we see more guys with this Royals organization get the call up from AAA to try to make some noise with this team? Or is it more likely that we see moves at the deadline to try to make some wholesale changes and put this team back in a position to contend?
Good question. I mean, I would say one of the things that's going to dictate what happens close to or near the deadline is the fact that there are so many teams, especially in the American League, that are within striking distance of a playoff spot. And teams are having a hard time deciding whether or not they're going to be buyers or sellers or trying to do a little of both and something in between. And so that makes the pool of players that are available even the more shallow. I also think that, again, in general, I think it's more difficult to acquire an impact hitter than it is to acquire an impact pitcher, starter, or reliever. I mean, impact relievers are the most widely available thing during most trade deadlines. Impact starters slightly less so, impact bats I think a little bit less than that. I think part of the reason is that just because a player has hit really well in one spot for the first half of the season doesn't necessarily mean that he comes to your team, whether it's the Royals or some other team, and all of a sudden does the exact same thing, because hitting is such a volatile thing within baseball. As far as internal, you know, changes or improvements, you know, just thinking about the guys that have been in AAA that are now with the Royals, Drew Waters, John Rabe, Nick Lofton, those are all players that started the season in AAA. The one that we could see come back up at some point is MJ Melendez. Outside of that, I'm not sure what kind of offensive pieces there would be in AAA. Cam Devaney is one that comes to mind, but positioning defensively would be kind of difficult. Obviously, Michael Massey's on the injured list. He's someone that's going to be back in the mix. And you hope that this stint on the injured list not only gets him obviously fully healthy, but also served as a little bit of a reset for him, because he struggled offensively this season too. And he was such a big part of the Royals offense last year, kind of lengthening the lineup and bridging that gap between the top half of the lineup and the bottom half of the lineup. I think it's more likely than not that if there is a significant change, it's going to be acquiring a player that is not currently with the Royals, but when, who, and how that happens is obviously remains to be seen.
Well, this Kansas City Royals team is now getting set for a 3-game series against the defending champion Los Angeles Dodgers. For, you know, argument's sake, the Royals are going to be trotting out probably their three best, most consistent pitchers so far this year. Noah Cameron tonight, Lugo, the probable starter tomorrow, and Bubich, the probable on Sunday. Where do you see this Royals team being able to be successful here over this 3-day series against the Dodgers, or 3-game series against the Dodgers this weekend, as they try to find something here in this homestand to hang their hat on, trying to avoid another winless homestand?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Dodgers are kind of a fascinating team. They have the best offense in baseball. I mean, they literally lead baseball in average on base, slugging, home runs, average runners in scoring position, runs per game. That makes sense because they have Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Will Smith, Teoscar Hernandez, Max Muncy, on and on and on. Like, the offense is really, really good. That's what makes the Dodgers go. The pitching has been fascinating because they have two healthy starting pitchers in Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Dustin May, both of whom spent time in the injured list last year. But they basically have an entire starting rotation's worth of pitchers on their injured list. We're talking about Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, Roky Sasaki, Tony Gonsolin. So you look at the Dodgers roster right now, and they, in fact, have 10 relievers on their active roster and really only four pitchers that are traditional starters: Yamamoto, May, Clayton Kershaw, who pitched yesterday, and then there's that Shohei Ohtani guy who's slated to start on Saturday, but he's still not necessarily starting in a traditional sense. He's still, you know, going 1, 2, 3 innings, you know, kind of slowly but surely building back up. So that's a quasi-bullpen game in and of itself. You know, Denny always says, the more times you open that bullpen door, the chances increase that the guy who comes in just doesn't have it that day. So I think where the Royals are going to have an edge, for better or for worse, and you can look at this glass half full or glass half empty, is that they're going to face a lot of pitchers coming out of the Dodgers bullpen. Guys that, yes, are nasty, but, you know, you flip a coin, they might not have it that day, and it's going to be up to the Royals to pounce on the weak spot of the Dodgers, which is their pitching staff and their bullpen. Their starters' ERA has been 4.20 this year. That's bottom half of the league. Their starters do not go deep into games. So it'll be interesting to see how that progresses over the course of this weekend. As far as the offense goes, you know, the Royals are going to have to do their best to limit what is a behemoth offense. And like you pointed out, with Cameron Lugo and Bubic, those have been your three most consistent starters. I throw Michael Wacha in that mix too. But, you know, they're going to have to really limit runs. That's been the formula all season. The Royals have been successful when they have limited the opponent's offense and have scored just enough to come out ahead. And they're going to need to do that, you know, even better this weekend. I do think, I'd like to think from an emotional perspective, you know, every game's a game, every opponent's an opponent. And, you know, that's what the Royals preach, and that's truly what they believe. But I got to feel like there is some sense of, hey, the defending World Series champs are in town. Here are all these superstars. They're expected to steamroll everybody. I believe that that's the kind of thing that can light a fire under a team, regardless if they're a team that's underperforming, overperforming, playing well, not playing well. I think when a team like the Dodgers comes to town, I think that's a team that gets you out of your seat.
Visiting with Jake Eisenberg, he's the play-by-play voice of the Kansas City Royals. And Jake, with 17 games remaining until they hit the All-Star break, right? These three against LA at home, and then you go on the road for four against Seattle, and then three against the Diamondbacks before six games, three against Pittsburgh and three against the Mets before we hit that July 14th break in Major League Baseball. What is the best case scenario for this Royals team, in your view, over the course of these 17 games as they get set for the back half of the season and hopefully another push towards a postseason berth?
I'm going to be a little snarky here, Logan. Best case scenario is winning 17 straight games and going into the All-Star break having won 17 in a row, right? That's obviously the best case scenario. In truth, I think you'd feel really good if you went into the All-Star break as a 500 team. I think we've seen the last couple of years that being a 500 team keeps you pretty squarely in the mix for a wild card spot. Obviously, the Royals would like to be much better than that, but heading into the All-Star break at 500 keeps you squarely in the playoff mix, keeps you squarely in a divisional race. I think even though the Tigers have been really, really good this year, I think you're currently five games below 500. You go 12-7 over these next 17 games, you wind up at 500 heading into the All-Star break. I think that's something you'd feel pretty good about. I think that's something that at least I'd feel pretty good about. I do want to make one point about the division, because I think this is something I noticed yesterday that I think is kind of interesting too. This point last year, through 81 games, the Royals were five games over 500, 43-38, but they were 10 games back of Cleveland for first place in the division, right? Like, that's a double-digit deficit. It was actually the Royals' largest deficit of the season last year. This year, 38-43, so flip the record, five games under 500, and they're 12.5 games back of the Tigers. So a little bit of a larger deficit, but, you know, still sort of within the same vicinity. One thing I found interesting is looking back at last year's schedule, well, the Royals actually caught the Guardians for first place in the division at the tail end of August. And then obviously September didn't go very well in the wake of any Pasquantino's injury and the other things that happened. But the point is that between the end of June last year and the end of August, the Royals went from 10 games back in the division to tied for first in the division, which is all to say that even though we're 81 games in, and even though the Royals are 12 and a half games back of the Tigers, there is nothing that says the Royals can't make up that gap and pull into a tie for first at some point in late August or early September and make this a race down the stretch. Because keep in mind, the Royals are one part of this equation. The Tigers are another part of this equation. They've got to keep playing well just as much as the Royals are trying to play better, right? So I look at this in two ways. You look at the first half of the season and relative to maybe expectations, especially recently with the winless homestand and this home losing streak. It's been tough, you know, over the course of the month of June while the Tigers have been riding high. But I also think that as tough as maybe this recent stretch has been and maybe the overall first 81 games have appeared to be, well, you look up, you're five games under 500, you're only 3.5 games out of a playoff spot, and you still have an entire half of the season left to go. That is a whole lot of baseball.
I think that's extremely well said, Jake. Appreciate your time this morning, and go out and enjoy yourself at Kauffman this weekend. Hopefully we have a chance to see some good Royals baseball over the next 3 days against the defending champion Dodgers.
Yeah, should be a fun weekend. Thanks.
That was Jake Eisenberg. He's the radio play-by-play voice of the Kansas City Royals here on 96.5 The Fan, joining us earlier in the show this morning to talk about the recent struggles and what we could expect here as we quickly approach the All-Star break in just a couple of weeks. And something's got to give. Royals five games below 500 in the midst of losing five in a row. Well, Nathan, this is the time in the program where we do the random question of the day, and I think I have one.
Random question.
All right. Well, right now, you know, outside of what I do for the radio station, I do some odd jobs here and there, and right now I'm running a fireworks tent out in Trimble, Missouri, which is near Smithville Lake, and you kind of have to find ways to entertain yourself, right? The tent's open 14 hours a day from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., and there's not always somebody inside the tent all the time. So I play video games, I watch movies and TV shows and all those sorts of things. And I find myself constantly like reverting back to old movies, old TV shows. And it's funny to me, I don't feel like people do that as much anymore. Like people younger than us don't do that as much anymore because of streaming and all those. Like we all remember what it took to channel surf back in the day, right? You would just flip until you found something and you discovered these comfort shows, these comfort movies and things that you're constantly watching. So I guess my question of the day is, what is your comfort movie? What is your comfort TV show? What is that thing that if channel surfing still existed and you were trying to find something to watch on TV and it popped up, you no matter where, what point in the movie or TV show it was, you would sit and watch that thing to finish?
Not a huge movie guy, but TV shows, yes. I'm going to rack my brain here a little bit, but I'll tell you, if there's anything on TV like the Survivor, the Amazing Race, something that's like physical competition based, I can throw that on in the background and know I'm going to be okay. Either while I'm doing some work, if I want to just have some background noise while I go to sleep, or to set up and help me pass the time. I'm usually going to some sort of competition, which can be kind of corny, but some sort of competition TV show like that. That's what immediately comes to mind.
Interesting. Like a competition show, are you talking like Amazing Race?
Yep.
Or, okay.
Yeah, Survivor, Amazing
Survivor.
Race.
Gotcha.
Maybe, it's usually those two.
I used to watch, my mom was a big fan of the show Big Brother when I was a kid. Used to watch that all the time. My wife right now, along with many, many women across this country right now, is bought in to Love Island. Fully bought into Love Island. I come home from work and that's where she is, on the couch watching Love Island. And I'm immediately like, I'm just going to grab my dinner and go to the basement and play video games because I am not watching that.
I had no idea. I was talking to a couple friends of mine in the last week or so. They say it's on five nights a week. Because I was on with CDOT last week. We were talking about Love Island and he said, man, the timeline's telling me that I need to get on Love Island. Like it's time to get on. I didn't realize that this is not a weekly show. This is not a, oh, it comes out in 8 episodes at one time. No, this is a 5-night-a-week, like,
yeah,
this is like being invested in a baseball team or something. This is like 24/7
ridiculous
drama.
It is ridiculous. She started like back in the spring. She like went and watched a bunch of old seasons because one of her best friends is like big into the show. And I don't know. I've not been able to get into it. I just can't. I got a lot of people in the text line. Back to the Future, Forrest Gump, Terminator 2. So not the first one, but the second one. Okay, interesting. Seinfeld, The Office, The Price is Right. Anything on HGTV or the Food Network? Interesting. Tombstone, great movie. Great movie. Tombstone over Wyatt Earp, in my opinion. Both great movies, but Tombstone's better. Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives with Guy Fieri. School of Rock. Law and Order SVU, any of the Lethal Weapon movies, Band of Brothers, hell yeah, dude. Band of Brothers is a good one for me. If I had to like narrow it down, if I had to pick like one movie or one TV show, this is weird. This is going to be a strange phrase for me. And we talked about something similar to this back a few months ago. MASH is sort of like my comfort TV show. I used to watch it all the time with my dad when I was a kid. My dad had like the whole DVD box set at one point, and then he bought the Bluetooth box set. We used to watch that all the time when I was a kid. It's still my favorite show of all time. So if I can't find anything to watch, just throw on some MASH, which is on Hulu, is always a good one for me. And then movie-wise, National Treasure. Both of them. Both National Treasure and National Treasure Book of Secrets. I love those movies. I'm a huge history nerd. I could sit there and watch movies like that all the time. I'm also very much a sucker for like the Oceans movies. I don't know. There's something about those like sort of like suspense sort of films that I absolutely love.
Yeah. I haven't seen this anywhere on the text line, but I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up. So I did think about it a little more. If I'm scrolling through TV channels, if I'm scrolling through even like Facebook or something and I see a clip or an episode of Whose Line Is It Anyway, with one of the old ones with the original cast, Colin and Wayne, and when Drew is still there, I'm whatever, if it's an episode or a short clip online, doesn't matter, I am there for the duration of that. I've lost, it's over, I'll see you when the clip is over.
Yeah, just end up down a Facebook video rabbit hole all of a sudden. Yeah. You've spent an hour and a half on Facebook watching 6-minute video clips with some random like person or some line in the middle of it. So that's because that's how they can avoid copyright infringement. World War II in Color, that's a good one. Happy Gilmore, yup. Everybody Loves Raymond, that 70s show. Never saw Everybody Loves Raymond. I watched a lot of the Office or How I Met Your Mother. That's probably number two for me. Like comfort TV shows, just throw it on. How I Met Your Mother is always going to be a favorite for
that's
me.
That's big on my list as well.
913-586-7965 is our number. Cody and Gold here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber in for Cody and Alex. Nathan Williams is in for Drew. Final hour of the program coming up next here on your home for Kansas City sports.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis Fountain Drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi Fountain Drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
The temperature's rising outside, but you can stay cool and comfortable inside with Blinds.com. Don't miss Blinds.com's 4th of July mega sale happening now. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments with upfront pricing, no showroom markups, and no pushy salespeople in your home. Whether you're a DIY warrior, prefer the white glove treatment, or somewhere in between, Blinds.com makes it easy. Our virtual design experts can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. Plus, we can even handle everything from measure to install. Style every room effortlessly with classic shutters for living spaces, blackout for bedrooms, motorized options for total convenience, shades for your patio too. With over 25 million windows covered and 40,000 five-star reviews, Blinds.com is the trusted name in custom window treatments, all backed by our 100% satisfaction guarantee. Don't miss Blinds.com's 4th of July mega sale happening now. Save up to 50%, plus get a free professional measure. Up to 50% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.